July 12th, interviewing Mary Johnson. When were you born? Birth date and birthplace.
Please say, August 4th, 1909.
Okay.
I remembered.
Okay.
Then my mother married a man, he's a Jew from the Wolf Clan, and his name is, his Jew name is Hutton, and he's a widow before he got two grown-up children. I have seen one girl and one boy, and I have seen this young lady before she was married. Her name is Josephine Tomlinson, and her brother's name is Joseph Tomlinson. And Josephine stayed by her grandparents. That's the man's mother. And the man's stepfather is, they call him Johnny Johnson, that's his English name, and his chief name is Panulacha at that time, and that's where my half-sister stayed, and Joseph stayed with Mum and my dad. And when I was about a year old, they lived at the smokehouse that belongs to my mother's stepdad. And he's a chief of the Wolf Tribe. And that's Chief Hawao. And he married my great-great-grandmother. And grandmother's name is Lucy. And her chief name is Anhalaya. And they live across the river of Hawao's fishing ground across the village here in Kispeyax. And the name of the fishing site is Gun'ok. So I didn't know what Gun'ok means. Some young people used to ask me, but I didn't know. I didn't ask any of the elders what it meant. And when I was, like I said, I was about a year old, and my dad's name is William Tomlinson. And they went out in September to hunt way up north. He goes out with my aunt, his husband. My aunt is Emily Natz, and her husband English name is Juan Calat, and his TV got many TV name Black Mech, and H.D. Gabby, and Sanik. Sanik is a Stikin name, a highest name in Stikin. And I was told that the Stikins murdered one person from Chief Neist's house, that's where Walter belongs, and one of the families murdered, so that's why they give this name to them, Sanik, and including a hunting ground. I don't know where the hunting ground is, but at the first I wasn't going up there, but I was told the name is given to them and a part of a hunting ground. So while they were out hunting, there were many grizzly bears during the month of September, and they were the grizzlies hunt those groundhogs. That's why they are on the mountains too. And one time they were out, they were attacked by a very large grizzly bear, and he attacked my dad and he thought perhaps the grizzly bear thought he died, so he just left him there, and Walter went running away in the bush where he will shoot, but maybe he's afraid to shoot the bear. And my dad told my mum when he comes home that he was unconscious for I don't know how long. And when he came to, he revived again, and I know the reason why, because they were Christians, and perhaps Walter is praying, that's why he revives again. The bear just he's so big, his teeth were underneath his jaws and on the top of his head. And after that he dreamed the same night. My dad dreamed, and he dreamed of the grizzly bear. He sat on top of him and of where he laid, and he cried. He sees the tears of the grizzly bear, and he said, the grizzly bear said, I made a mistake. It was your partner that I was going to attack. And the grizzly bear is very sorry of what he had done. That's why the people in the olden days supposed, the lady is supposed to be really keep herself clean and not to fool around while her husband is out hunting. And the same today I have seen when a woman or a man fools around behind each other's back, it's really unlucky for them. Some I have seen they never get to have a wealth or anything nice home or any everything should be really nice in the house and enough to get along. That's how it is. It's the same thing today. If a man is not clean or a woman, then they are very unlucky. Like the Bible says that whatever is bound on earth will be bound in heaven. That's how it is, and this is the way the grandfathers and the grandmothers interpret what the Bible says when I was small. Whatever the world agrees of what kind of life you lead, if you lead a good life and the people of the world agrees about you, and that's the same in heaven, they said, that's how they explain what the Bible says. And when father come home, and I believe they come home early because he got hurt. That's why my grandparents and my mother and my half brother were still living across at Gunnar when they come home, and he told what happened while he was unconscious. He dreamed that he came to the smokehouse and nobody notices him or talks to him. He even picked me up and put me on his lap, and nobody says anything to him. So that's how it is. When a person dies, he travels far away in a few seconds. He goes to whichever place he's from. That's why people today hear something as if someone is going around or someone opens the door. That's how it is. A person that died, his spirit goes to everywhere he has been. So this tragic happened by the bear in September, and in the spring, during the month of May, when they when all the people were busy on the potato garden. And he was with my mother when they were fixing the garden. He's my half-brother. And when they had lunch, Mother said, he can't swallow, perhaps the bear bit one of the veins and that infects his throat, and there were no good doctors in those old days, like what the white people call competent doctors. But the doctors are already there, and they did help many people. But Mother never mentioned that he once went to see the doctor after it happened. So after he can't swallow, he went home alone while they were still working on the garden. And when he passes Henry Arlo's house down below there, and he knows these people because before he met my mother, he married another young lady, and so the family were outside when he passes them. And he loves them, I know that. That's why he stopped and talked to them. And the reason why they were separated with this young lady is because, and he's legally married to this lady. And he talked to them for a while. The reason why they broke up is another young man took her away from him. So after he talked to them, he went down home. The grannies got two log houses close to the edge of the Skeena River, where there were a lot of rows of houses down there. Some were frame houses and some were log houses. And the other log house is where they live, and the other is where they stored the things. Perhaps it's their first log house. And when it's towards late in the afternoon, then my mother come home packing me. I was about a year old when it happened, and he found him in the other log house. He commit suicide, a rope around his neck, and nobody knows what happened until Mother ran through the village crying out to see what happened. So after that, I was told, great-great-grandmother told me that Dad's brother and their mother got after Joseph for they asked him if my dad had an argument with my mother, or if they fight or had an argument, but Joseph said no, nothing happened, he just went home. So finally they coaxed him and asked him questions. Finally they beat him up. So it really hurts him. I know it hurts him bad enough when our dad kills himself. And to make it worse, his uncle and grandmother got mad at him. So he's not feeling good, so he went to the school at Chilliwack, Sardis School. And I just see his picture, I didn't see him. My half-sister showed me his picture. And he died in Chilliwack. Perhaps it's the same time when late Silas Johnson and late Selena Johnson went to that school too. A lot of young people went there too. And in 1957, I think, when Violet was very small, Brenda's a little older than Violet, we went to Vancouver with Reverend Jack Williams and his wife. We went there and we were going to visit late Charlie Hillis at Sardis Hospital. And on our way there, tears were flowing down my cheeks. I know that that's where he's buried, but no one will know the exact spot. This is what I was told long time ago. Nobody sees when you have great sorrow, it doesn't show, they said. And this time, nobody sees. I was really hurt on our way to Chilliwack. And when we visit Charlie, when he was in there, and later on, perhaps a few years ago, I went with the group elders and young people from Morristown Someone as bold asked me to go with them, with the group, as I returned to the elders at Sardis. And I did go. That's when I asked a young lady where I stayed. When I told him about Brother's buried somewhere when he died at school. And he said, whenever a person died there, they ask the village, the native village, permission. Their village, she said, that if they will bury the person at the cemetery, and that, so I believe that's what they did, so I feel a lot better when she told me this. And after that, my mum was alone for full 7 years. That's the reason why the years between my brother Stanley and I, I am 8 years older than Stanley. But mother marries the same tribe and the same wolf tribe. That's why all the wolves of the house of Hiamacha and house of Hawar, they are all both my dad and my stepdad's relation. They were brothers. And I have seen my dad's tombstone when I was small at the cemetery up there. And he died in 1910. So that's how it is, and I was about a year old when he died. My stepdad's name is George Wilson. And he is the brother of the Wilson family. And I believe he is the youngest of the brothers. The eldest is Timothy Harris, late Ernest Harris's dad. Ernest got many sisters and brothers, but they all died, and just Sophia Moody is left today of his sister, and my dad's chief name, stepdad, is Ambachand. So after that, I have seen my grandmother and my great-great-grandmother when they used to put up a great feast when I was Canal about 1916. And like the rest of the folks said, all the Indians got cows and horses, wagons, buggies, to take them around or walk by foot. And that's how grandmother and grandfather, they got a large farm across the sportsman's lodge. That's where we used to go up in the springtime, like, or whenever there's still ice on the river, when they used to move up there and the fish and steelheads, they put the nets through the ice and they catch some steelheads. Or sometimes they catch them by hooks through the ice, trout and all kinds of trout. That's why they move up there during the month of March. And the reason is my grandfather Daniel Gawa, and his chief name is, first chief name is Omahait Gawa. And his second chief name is Meus. Meus is the head of the house of Kispeyak. I have seen the houses, both houses are in the middle is house of Putkunuk, and that's the fireweed, and next to it is the house of Diplodaf, that's another fireweed. And next to Diplodaf is Bale's house. And Bale and Alu. I was told that Alu is the head chief of the family in the ancient time. And Bale's family know it themselves. And next to Bale's house is they even got their names for their house, and some of the family forget. They were all forgotten. And Bale's house name is Zandak. And Mel's house name is Zandanao. And next to Mel's house is Yeshahuk house. That's the house of the rest of the family, their family, like Alex, Alan, Lan, Tawamu, and many other chiefs. Their names are Kuhpen, and there was a sound that comes along with it. And Pestai, that's our move out. And I have seen Alex Kalan before he got down, and his white name is Moses Stevens. And that's his chief name is Alex Holland. And next to the house of the Esther Hook is Shumbak. That's the wolf tribe, and the Esther Hook is fireweed. Shumbak is, that's the earliest got his own house on the top of the hill, not very far up, but that's where the fishery is today. There were two feast houses there, two houses of the family. The first one is Viela's house, and next to it is Loch's house. There were both wolf tribes, even though the people in the olden days got more than one house, but still they are the same tribe, the same family. In another way, the reason the other chief moved out of the house, the head chief's house, is because they are so wealthy and the house is so full, so they move out. It isn't that they had trouble or hate each other, and they built their own house. That's what they do. And I didn't see this Ella's house built. Maybe it's long before I was born. But grandmother told me that it's the Kaldo's house when they move to the spirits. And they had a feast when those two houses were finished, and they called that piece of land where the house stands is Sigolmith. That means where the trees are burnt down, and that's what they call. And they even got a spot at the end of the street where I live now is for the cemetery, and I know some of them were buried there. This was before they had another cemetery up above the village on the other end. And I've seen the stone were standing there. Well, some were still standing. And I also remember when they had a feast, my family, Uncle George Williams and my grandmothers and all the family, the Moat family from Hazelton. The reason why they are from Hazelton is because one of our grandmother married in Hazelton and married one of the chiefs from the Lough Sael tribe. And the chief's name is Atiyam. That's all my uncle's dad's name. And when we used to go down and visit them, the Moat brothers, when I was small, and Stanley was about a year old, we used to spend a week with them. Or whenever there's a feast in Hazelton, it lasts a week or 2 weeks. And we used to stay with the Moats. Every time when we just go down to town for a day, we always go to them and have lunch with them. And I thought this will continue all my life. But many years ago they were all gone. A lot of them died young, really young. I remember their sister, her name is Martha. She got babies. She married late Alfred Brown. And she died really young. One of the brother died really young too. His name is Adam Moat. And another really youngest brother, his name is Albert Moat. He died really young, even before he got married. And today I got no place to go in Hazelton whenever I am in town. I just used to look up where their houses used to stand. And the only place I could go today is the cafes in Hazelton. And it's sad and lonely for me when I go to town, because I remember how happy the family are when they get together, cook something special to eat. And I also remember when my tribe raised a stone. The reason why they would use butter stone is because the first church here is in this village is Methodist Church, and grandfather Daniel Gawa used to tell us about the real first minister that come into the village. His name is Master Duncan, and they used to, in their own way, they used to say Master Duncan. And he lives in the village on the other. And when there'll be a service, grandfather said he comes out with a small bell, like a small bell that they use when we go to school at the end of the recess time. They ring this bell and all the kids ran into the school. That's what he usually just shake the bell by his hand. And those that could understand him didn't say anything to him. Grandfather said they used to go to his service, and some of the people, they don't really understand. They don't understand what's going on, so they walk over to him and grab the bell away and throw it down the hill. There's a road that goes through the village in front of the houses, those big houses, and a small hill through the village. And there's another road that goes below, and that's where they used to throw the bell down that little hill. But the minister didn't say a word. He just walked down there and took the bell and started ringing it again and walked through the village. I told this story about this minister at the Kishan, and they said they never heard about, never written about in any books, old books, about Reverend Duncan come up our way. But they were thinking about Duncan at Matley Castle, where they move where the people move. And I heard where the place where he lived is still looked after today. How he put some hair in his bed as a mattress. And his shoes were still there, clothes, everything, and beg on someone to look after it, keep it clean as an antique. But I believe what Grandfather said, it must be a different Duncan that he meant. And after this, after he went away, then Robert Tomlinson came, and he lived at what they call Champaglast, on Grandfather's hunting ground. He took both parts of the land where his farm is. And the reason why he built his farm there is because that's his ancestors' hunting ground at the back of it, till it gets to where the mountains are. And there were some lakes there, he said. And the creek run from the lake and ran through his farm and into Pittsburgh River. So across this is what a small little creek runs into Pittsburgh River. On this side is what they call Shanrechlas. And what Rechlas means is to take the bark off a tree or cedar pine or what, I forget the other kind of a balsam tree. And this is where Robert Tomlinson lived, and he learned our language, and he really talked our language. I didn't see him, and he really teaches the people of the Word of God. And while they were there, I was told their little baby died. And this little baby is buried this side of and Redrest, is where the Sportsman's Lodge is today. You could see the little creek runs into the Kisbeck River. And on this side, below the road near the river, is where the little cemetery is of that baby, of the second minister for our village. Perhaps the family pass it on to the new generation. That's why that little cemetery is always renewed today and have it well painted in white. So after they left, then Pierce him, Grandfather said, I didn't see when Pierce was here in the village, and he really worked hard. They said his mother is a native woman from down the coast, and his dad is a white guy. So he really knows our language too. The people did really, really good when he was here, they said. A revival broke out when I didn't see when he was here. But I was told a great revival broke out. This was when our late brother Moses Morrison was a small baby, and her mom packed him when they go to church. So one of the other is late Steve Morrison, his cousin. They were packed, and I don't know how many days the service goes on and they forget to eat, and the babies didn't eat too, but they never got sick, because the Spirit of the Lord is taking care of them. They were really amazed. They didn't forget what happened. Everything goes real good. The Pierce told them what to do, and he, even himself, he's so humble himself, I was told. Sometimes he just crawl on the floor, and they done much fasting and praying. And that's for the reason why many people got cattle and horses and many, many stores. There was a great big building that was torn down a few years ago. They call this big building Upper Skeena Store. It's just merchandise that they sold in the building. And while the steamboat comes up from the river, I didn't see the steamboats too. But I was told it used to get to below the village here, and that's how they got all their merchandise and food, grocery stores. Some got grocery stores. And they also got, like some of the folks mentioned, that there was a sawmill at the end of Glen Bowen, and a great creek runs from Andam. That's Andam belongs to my ancestors. When they first scattered after the Dumlach Arm at the all the first native village. My ancestors moved to Kichigukla, and their leader is Hachbukot. Hachbukot means it disappears for a while, then it reappears again. That's their leader. But Aunt Olive was one of the chief branched off from Hachbukot, like I said before. When our houses are full, the rest of the chiefs move out with his family. And my ancestors move to up here this way, and after they got all the histories from the Kichigukla River, and then they move up here and they form a village at the foot of this mountain between Amdamch and Sigidoch. They both belong to my ancestors. And they form a village, just a family village alone. And they got a fishing site this side Glen Bowl. And that's where they stayed. They got a feast house there too. And whenever there's a feast, they could invite the rest of the villages too. But while they were there, the chief from this village had a meeting with Aunt Olivus from Jivasa, and they wanted him, Chief Gitludat, would like to have these chiefs move up here. That's why they left the village, and now today it was taken by a vegetable farm. And the village, the ancient village name is Wulqalibach. Or if you live at Wulqalibach, they will call you Git Wulqalibach. Git means that's where Wulqalibach is, where you are from. The reason it says Wulqalibach means runs the other way. Instead of following the Skeena, it runs up, and it runs where the vegetable farm is. And they fill it up with their garden dirt today, but you could still see Wulqalibach is still bubbling out of that at the corner of the vegetable farm. And so after all the houses were established and they were in rows in the village here, when my ancestor moved up here, and that's why they have their house standing in front of the rest of the houses at the end of the rows, and the house name is Lulumit, That means it stands in front, facing the rest of the houses. So today we are still called Gitlushamitru. It won't pass away, it will still stand till the end of the earth, and all the places which they own will still be standing, and they got all the names of the fishing sites and the names of the mountains. That mountain and Amkh means where the moon shines on. And while all my uncles that live in Hazelton were alive, and all the uncles up here, the elder brother, the Maud brother, lives here when I was small. I have seen him. His name is Albert Maud. He is late Matthias Maud's dad, and his chief name is Yal. And late Matthias Maud's dad, I mean, and Arthur Maud is the only one that's still alive today. That's their dad. And their sister, Maggie Green, died a few years ago. And that's Yal's daughter too. And flu broke out in the village while we were living at grandfather's ranch up at Sha'an Reifles, where we live. And that's when he died of flu. Many people died, and his brothers took his body to Hazelton. That's where they buried him. And the reason is that's when the family branched off from Kijiduktla, and they also got a law in the ancient time that whatever the crests and all the names in Hachbukot's house and Lilbuk's won't touch, and whatever the crests and the names at Aunt Lilbuk's and Jivasa's house up here, Hachbukot's family won't touch it. So today, and the name and label which I am holding today will not go back to Gitlushamitru. If anything happens, it will still be on the main post in Kisbeak. Our main post is the house of the family. That's what they call it in the ancient time, is the house, the family's house. But they use it whenever there's a feast. So after when Pierce like I said, was still in the village here. He does help the people, but they said half of the village got converted and half stayed in their own way, like the beast. This was long before the white people understand what it's all about. And the people that what they call heathen on the right side of the village, and on the left is what they call sometimes they call them Gashgulit, that means they were Christian, they learned how to be a Christian, and they made a great big rope out of cedar, which they call the oak, and they set it down right in the middle of the village. The heathens won't pass that rope, or now the Gashgulit won't pass the rope. That's their law. But if a Christian would like to come back to the heathens, he will put up a feast among them, and this feast means Yalt. Yalt means he returned to them, to their old way. But the Christians, whenever they had a banquet, they spread a white table, they call Machshwanithok, that means a white table, where they gather together. This was because the reason why is the early ministers didn't understand our culture and about our pole. They said the Indians worship idols. That's why they call it sin. And a few years ago, the United Church apologized on the newspaper about all this. So I'm very glad to, when I read the paper, I'm glad that this church really understands, because the Indians, when I was small, they already do away with, I didn't see, whenever there's a feast, I was told there were no electric lights in those days. All they had is an open fire in the middle of the building, and whenever the fire goes down while the feast still goes on, then the Andamanak would go out and chop up his great big canoe that he bought from Haida, a very large canoe, because they carry tons of merchandise and food when they come home from the coast or go down and threat to what the people around the coast get, like seaweed and dried halibut and dried clams and dried fish eggs and many other nice things to eat. And they also dry some soap berries up here and huckleberries, blueberries, the low bushes. And they trade it to them. That's how they are. Or sometimes the boat from the coast would come up. That's why they use these great big canoes. And a manak means is the wife of the family that gives out, and a manak, which they still do today. If a big chief put up a feast, then his relatives, nieces, wives would donate something. That's what we call an amanat. And that's what they did in the olden days. They chop up these nice canoes and throw them into the fire because they don't want the Byzantine chief to sit in the dark. That's why they did that. But when those that sit near the fire, this is what the people call Machzeh Lak, that's where another row of chiefs sit in front, is near the fire. But when the fire is too hot, but they can't move because they are deep, that's why some of the Andamanaks would come and both hold the end of a Hudson Bay blanket to keep the faces of the chiefs of being scorched. And when the blanket begins to be scorched, they throw it into the fire. And they do away with all these things. I didn't see them do it, but I was just told. I know there were many things that they do away, which is not good to them. Besides, we got electric lights today, and we can't just chop up anything and burn them. It's far different. And another thing they do away with is it's not a bad thing. They just put up a show, what they call Hat-e-Ram. Hat-e-Ram means they just gather together and dress up in different kind of costume and half naked and throw a skin blanket over them or moose skin, all kinds of headdresses. And they made a lot of noise. And they march through the village that I have seen this when I was small. They were just acting how it was in the olden days. And they marched to the feast house. And whenever they did this in the olden days, I was told that after they hear that the chief will put up a feast, then the Hare Kams will march into his house and ask the chief, they mention some nice food that really tastes real good, that they know the chief has, and they ask it, that they will eat it. And the chief, when at the feast, the chief served what the Hare Ram asked of him. That's why whenever I told this to the son of the white people, I used to say, I believe it's their Halloween, but it's a different kind of Halloween. They don't make a trick or put a ray, something sharp inside anything to eat. It's a nice clean Halloween. But they do away with this. It's done among the chiefs too. When I was told too that in the ancient time, the Hare Rams were always gathered together, and whenever anyone walks around close to them, they capture him and he joins them with the dance. It's not like the white people did, it's what they call kidnap. But it's a different kind. They did it just to the chiefs alone. And at the end of what they were doing, then the ones that are captured will put up a feast, they said. So that's what they do away with this too. And when it's about the church I am talking about before, is how they made a mistake about our culture and history. They didn't know that the poles are tombstone. So I'm very glad a lot of white people today understand, even some of the lawyers understand, the judge begins to understand. So I'm very glad I didn't dream that I'd live to tell what I have seen and what I have heard, because another law is not supposed to be broken among the Indians, is to tell the truth. In the olden days, they said in the ancient time they used to held many meetings before the chief that's supposed to be a leader to take a stand. They really examined even the wife of the chief. If the wife gossips and hurts someone's feeling, they put down the chief. Even though they don't write the history, but it was written in their heads and pass it on, like myself, I'm passing what I know, the true history, to my grandchildren today. So I'm very glad they are interested to know. That's how it is. And that's the reason why they had feasts, is because at the feast the chief gets up and the leader gets up and tells how far the boundary of their land, their territory, and which mountain they own, and the names of the mountain, and all the berry patches. And they used to have a little shack on their berry patches, is to where they call these little shack Wilpanizok. That means when it's time to pick the berries, they move where this little house is, and that's where they live, to pick the berries and dry them in this special house. And that's what they call Wilpanizok. And today the berry patches were all gone, all the cranberries were all gone, cranberry patches. They were all on the white people's farms and lands, and today there were no berry patches. And we have to go all the way up to Sigin to pick huckleberry. But today we used to pick a lot of blueberries at 4 miles up to what they call Campbell's Ranch up at Kisweaux River. That's Clearmlochas hunting ground and berry patch, and they caught steelheads in the river in the fall and in the springtime. It's a really rich land. The same with Hawaii's across the Amlaka. They got a rich land, and there were farmers there too. And they got a lake on Hawaii's territory, and And my mother said when I was very small, after I managed to walk around, she took me to the lake, Awau's lake, that's where her father, her stepfather, and she told me to sit still near the little stream that runs from the lake while she's fishing at the end of the lake, that perhaps I got up and I fell into the little stream. I have seen it when I was a teenager, and she showed me where I fell, and she used to laugh when she remembered how my eyes were open real wide at the bottom of the stream when she pulled me out. And my stepfather used to go out there in spring, like April. He made a basket to catch the fish, made out of cedar. Perhaps it's still laying there if he puts it underneath some spruce tree, because those cedar trees last long. Perhaps the fish basket is still there. You, whenever he goes out and lift the basket, he used to use a saddle horse and bring home about 50 pounds of all kinds of trouts, which taste really good. Sometimes he brought home a beaver from that lake, because it belongs to his ancestors. Everything is really good. They started, that's what they call Tispayaksaw Mill. That's a great big mill there.